listening to
Fishes
and Compoms!
That's a terrible sound, right? You know what else is terrible? Folks not hearing about a message of hope. Do me a favor. Please go ahead and like, share, and subscribe. That way you'll never miss out on our podcast episodes. Now, if you know somebody that might enjoy this episode, please copy and paste our link and send their way. Who knows? Sharing that link might help them experience a new sound.
You're listening to Creation Compass.
There is no God. What if the Bible was just written by a bunch of people that made it all up because they wanted their own control? What if Jesus wasn't even an actual person? I mean, a lot of people today believe he's God incarnate. What if your faith is just that? What if it's a blind faith? What if all of this is just made up and there really isn't even an afterlife after all? What if we're just going through the motions? What if everybody can truly decide what's best for himself or herself? I mean, do we even really need a supreme being, an authority, especially written in an archaic book? Well, as we've mentioned before here at Creation and Compost, that book is not just a book. It's a collection of 66 books. They're all rolled into one, and every book works together in unison to accomplish one thing. That's to glorify the God of creation. That same God of creation used his only begotten Son as the perfect sacrifice for all of sinful mankind. I mean, after all, creation is indeed fact that there is a creator. Nothing cannot create everything. An initially perfect creation, which did culminate in a perfect solution, using perfect Christ to die for imperfect creation. Now, this perfectly fits our imperfect ideals of what a utopia is. There's a lot of people who've tried to make their own perfect world, but the Bible says that we're all sinners. We've all fallen short of the glory of God. No one deserves anything good, yet a perfect God uses imperfect people to accomplish his perfect will. Now, today's guests are going to help tell the story of how God used them to steer Matt Bracewell back on the track of serving him, the Creator. Now, because remember, we should always be ready to teach the truth.
You're listening to Creation Compass.
Guys, well, we're back at Creation and Compost, and I know I say this probably on a regular basis, that we have a very special guest. Well, today we actually have two very special guests, and I want to take you back before I introduce them to July, August 2004. Now, some of you I know that are listening were either not born, or you might not have recalled what you were doing, but I know exactly what I was getting ready to do. And I was in my last semester at Columbus State University, and I was about to start student teaching. And I met this
let's say she was extremely kind and just, you know, just so welcoming and, you know, to this redneck hick, you know, South Georgia farm boy that was pretending to be educated. But I found out very soon that we couldn't be friends beyond the classroom because she was a diehard Auburn fan. And me being a Georgia Bulldog, I knew that the relationship was going to have to stay professional. There would be no cordiality beyond that. So, no, I'm just kidding. But anyways, I have two very special guests. I have Dr. Jeff Skinner and my student teacher from the fall of 2004 at Richards Middle School, Dr. Lisa Skinner. And thank you guys for being on our episode today.
Sure, it's a pleasure.
Yes, it is.
And like I said before we started recording, I'm going to refer to Dr. Lisa Skinner as Lisa, and that is very hard for me because throughout the entire time that I was a student teacher with her, I referred to as Dr. Skinner. So, but since we have two doctors on the line, I have to refer to them as Jeff and Lisa. Otherwise, you know. So again, our background, like I said, you guys have kind of moved all over. My wife and I, since we've been married, we've kind of moved all over, it seems. But one thing that stayed constant that I've noticed with you guys from a distance through Facebook land, the magic of Facebook land, is the fact that you guys have always been plugged in ministry to some level, to varying degrees and all. So what I'd like to do is just kind of get you guys to introduce yourselves, kind of, you know, the background behind the Skinners and your ministry, and just let our listeners just kind of hear a little bit about your testimonies.
Sure. Go ahead.
Well, I'm Lisa, and I grew up in Columbus, Georgia, where Dr. Bracewell did his student teaching. I grew up in the Nazarene Church. My father was a Nazarene pastor, and I know that I asked Jesus into my heart before I started school because they had a rule at our church that you could not get baptized until you were in kindergarten. And I just remember I had to wait to get baptized to show the church because I might not have really understood what was going on. So, I mean, I have been a Christian all of my life, not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but a Christian. When I finished high school and started college, I actually did 2 years at Columbus State, where you went, Matt, and I transferred to our Nazarene College in Nashville, Tennessee. And to be quite honest with you, Jeff Skinner, I met you in Columbus, Georgia at Macon Road Church of the Nazarene before I started Trevecca. Jeff was in the male traveling choir, and they sang at our church. And our family put in 4 of the guys. It was an all-male group. And my family put in 4 guys. And Jeff happened to be one of the ones that stayed at our house. And so I'll let you pick up from there.
Yeah, I slept with her before I ever knew who she was.
Hello.
In her house.
All right. I'm going to have to put a disclaimer in this episode. It was funny, before you come finish, we actually recently were listed as an explicit podcast, no joke. And I'm like, I don't know where the explicit comes in. Is it my kids with their commercial breaks? Was it the really bad impersonation I did of Randy Macho Man Savage from here? But I'll let you continue.
So we were part of the men's chorus there. We stayed at her house, and really just that was basically it. And then we were singing a couple of nights later at a nearby church in Alabama, and she came up there. And I really didn't think anything else about her. I went back to Trevecca, and a couple of years later, she showed up on campus, and I'm like, oh, hey, how are you? And I knew she was an Auburn fan like you, and I grew up in Tuscaloosa, and so I'm a big Alabama fan. And so, you know, I was just like, you know, these Auburn folks, bless their heart, they get a national championship once every 100 years, and they think they're all that in a bag of chips, you know? we really didn't start dating until after college. I was already graduated. You were in your last year, I guess.
Student teaching.
And anyway, we had known each other, but she was supposed to be a summer fling. Just basically 4th of July we met, and I was going to finish out the summer, and then we're going to break up. And 30 years later, we're still here. So she's kind of like a wart. She grows on you. So
the plan didn't work, huh?
That's right. That's right. No, she, and it's been a blessing. It really has. We definitely had some tough times. The very first year of our marriage, I was a minister of music at a church in Columbus, Georgia. And some politics took place. We ended up leaving there, going to a church in Valley, Alabama. That church burned down twice. And then my dad was, my mom and dad were in a car wreck. My dad was killed. My mom had to move in with us. Her mom had a brain tumor. What else happened that first year?
We bought a house.
And then she had to take my mom back and forth to, we were living in Columbus at the time. She had to take her back and forth to Opelika and physical therapy 3 times a week.
Yeah.
Plus she was getting her doctorate at the time.
Master's
at the time at Columbus State. So tough first year there, but it set us up. We said then, if we make it through this year, we're good, smooth sailing. So, and then I ran an IT, I was in an IT business for, I guess I was in the business for 12 years and then God called me, into evangelism. I really wasn't sure. I didn't see myself as a Billy Graham type person. And then over time, as that call became clear, I figured out that church planting was the number one most effective form of evangelism. And if you look at all the personality characteristics and all the profile of a church planter, without going through every detail, there's about 17 different bullet points. I met 13 of the 17, which is essentially a Christian entrepreneur that has some resiliency about him. And so I have had resilience. I mean, I won't go into all my background, but you don't grow up in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and in poverty without developing a little bit of resilience there. So anyway, we began planting a church and moved to Auburn, Alabama in 2006 and launched an Eagle Point Church in Nazarene. We had a great ministry there for about 10 years. We ended up planting 3 churches while we were there, a Hispanic church, in addition to a multicultural church, and then the Anglo church. So we had 3 churches that we planted there, and then we moved up to East Kentucky. And we were up in East Kentucky for about a year and a half, and then moved back down here to Georgia so she could finish out her doctorate. And I took a job as a chaplain here. Recently, I began to utilize my church planting experience in coaching with an organization called Dynamic Church Planting International. And I'd been certified as a master trainer for them for, I guess, since 2016. And they just called me during the pandemic and said, "Hey, what are you doing to train?" And I said, "Well, obviously not much right now because everything shut down." So they had a new online program they were piloting and was familiar with my background in IT and asked me if I would help them get that developed. So for the last year and a half, I've been helping them get the online portion of the church plant training. They've got 8 different tracks they offer. Church planting essentials, which is basically the nuts and bolts of planting, and church planting churches, which is the philosophy behind why we plant churches, and the idea that churches or church plant does best when it is mothered or it has a mother church, as opposed to just a parachute drop out in the middle of nowhere with somebody throwing money at it. We think in America that if you throw money at something, it's going to solve the problem. You being in education knows that throwing money at something doesn't solve the problem. You got to have people, and that's what makes the difference is the people there. And so with the mother church, you've got people, you've got some resources. It's not to say that money is not important, but money is not the determining factor of success or failure of a church plant. So they have church planting churches and mentoring church planters and then church systems, which is a podcast that I've been going through. And, I just recorded the last system yesterday. So I do the podcast, I do some coaching of church planters from around the world. I have people from India, people from Bangladesh, people from here in America, down in Alabama. I got a guy in Pakistan that I'm training right now. So it's exciting stuff when you see the gospel being spread across the world and in places where it's illegal to talk about the gospel. They have they are formed in the crucible of Christ when they are planting churches in these hostile areas where it's 90%, 95% Muslim. One of the planters is planting in India in an area called Odisha, India. And just about 10 years ago, the extremist Muslim burned a missionary and his family alive in a car. So that's how hostile it is down there. So it's great stuff. Really enjoyed it. And that's kind of what I'm doing right now.
And I'm still teaching.
Yay!
I started year 31 on March the 6th.
Wow.
And because we've moved around, we're back in Georgia for me to finish up my 30 years so that I can fully retire here in Georgia. While we were in Auburn, Alabama, we adopted two children. So we brought a little girl. I was not able to have children. And so we brought our little girl, Hayden, home from the hospital at 2 days old through foster care to adopt. And she is now 15, learning to drive. And then 9 months later, the state of Alabama called us with a boy who was ready to be adopted. He was 3 and a half. And so we have a son, Blaine, who just graduated high school and is heading to our alma mater, Trevecca, in August. And so
now they're at an expensive stage. So if anybody else wants to adopt them.
Well,
GoFundMe. Hey,
well, probably the only time you'll ever hear me quote Hillary Clinton, it takes a village, right? But anyway,
I need to learn composting so I can save a little money.
Yeah. Well, that's
chicken coops.
Well, I was always told by a lot of people, and probably Lisa as well, how full of, certain things I was. So I figured, why not just talk about it all the time? And, like I told you earlier, have it on your hands. Anyways.
You're listening to Creation Compass.
So the following clip is actually from this past week. I was outside working on a chicken coop, and my little daughter Merritt decided she wanted to come out and help. And I just wanted to play this. I just thought it's precious and just shows how when a young person wants to help out, they want a responsibility, something to do. It is always extremely important to make sure you validate that. And if you were able to, help them find something to do, it tends to keep them out of trouble doing other things. So, just check this out.
Dad?
Mm-hmm?
Could our roosters grow eggs now?
Well, roosters don't grow eggs. Hens do. The girls do. The boys don't.
Where's the girls go?
Those are the two girls right there.
The one with the... Is the red one a girl? Or is the pink one?
They're both white, and they have a little bit of red on them. Those are both hens. Those are both girls. And then the one that's got the black on him?
Yeah, that's a boy.
That's a boy. That's a rooster.
Okay, I think the girl doesn't have a nest for her eggs.
Well, I actually have a nesting box right here.
Can I see?
You sure can.
I can't see it.
I know. I'm going to show you. Here, gotta put your shovel down. Oh. All right, I want you to pick this thing up right here. Pick that little top up. See it? Uh-oh. Hold it. There you go.
Is that the nest?
That is. That's where she'll... That's called her nesting box. And that's
can
where...
Can you take a picture of it?
Yeah, sure.
Also, you have to press that, then press that.
Oh, okay, we gotta turn it off. Anyways, thank you for helping me. You did a good job.
That's called recording.
That's called recording.
Remember, you pinched your finger.
I did. I pinched my finger. Daddy was bleeding, wasn't he? Yep, Daddy's got cuts everywhere. Thank you for all your help. I love you being out here with Daddy.
Me too.
You too. You like farming?
Sir.
Give me five. You give me five. Oh, you hit so hard. Good job, girl.
know, a few things there. One thing that you mentioned about, you know, you're talking about all over the world. You mentioned India, Bangladesh, and Alabama. It was so funny. Recently, we had kids fill out what they loved most about the school that I teach at here in Lynchburg at Liberty Christian Academy. And one of them talked about the variety, the diversity that we have at our school. And they were talking about we've got people from all over the world. And then they mentioned some of those, you know, some of the countries in Asia. And then they said Mississippi, which I thought was pretty funny. And having just gone through there last week, you know, I have to admit, they're, you know, in that Delta region, it can be interesting for sure.
There's places in Alabama like that too.
Well, you know, I've got plenty of Alabama jokes to go around, but I'm going to save those. But anyways, but you know, what I think is really neat, and you know, you talk about the different struggles and things that you guys have gone through. I think one area in evangelism and reaching out to people, I think one area that the church in particular, just from an observational standpoint, has really failed in a lot of ways in outreach is preparing people for those downtimes. Because, you know, we want to preach, you know, if you turn the TV on, I think a lot of people have such a blurred conception, like our perception of who Jesus Christ is, and the fact that, you know, you look at what Jesus and what his disciples endured and just the horrendous deaths that they all, including Jesus, that they all experienced. Now, he even said specifically that, you know, if they hated me, they're going to hate you. If they kill me, they're going to kill you. And some people, you know, do understand what that means, and then some don't. And I know everyone is not crucified. Everyone's not beheaded. Everyone is not burned alive in a car, although that does go on a lot. But the persecution is extremely real. And I think what we've done in Christian circles, at least from my little bit of time in it, is saying, you know, wow, I really need to make sure I let these kids know who Jesus is, and the fact that when you choose to follow him, it's not going to be an easy road. You're not going to be the most, if you're doing it right, you're not going to be the most famous YouTuber. You're not going to have the most, you're not going to have the most likes and follows and retweets and reshares. You're going to have people that come at you. You're going to have the trolls and the bots. They're all going to come at you, and you're going to get spammed. Right. And that's it. I mean, and so a long time ago, I had to stop looking to see how many people viewed it or how many people downloaded it, because the reason I started it was not about me. It was about the message that God put on my heart and convicted me by back in 2009 when I was into teaching for just a few years and had already gotten so bored with the routine and was just like, you know, why did I start doing this? And you have to go back. And like I said, I have to say that God put you, Lisa, in my life in particular, allowed me to serve under you to be able to see what the real purpose was. And even though at the time that I was a student teacher with you, I was definitely not living for the Lord. I was extremely, I had grown very, very cold in my relationship, my walk. I had gone through some things in my life that I used as excuses not to be close to God. I let other people's experiences or maybe their failed ministries to dictate what I did. And so when I first started teaching, honestly, it was a job. I was going to get my summers off for the most part, my week. Right. You know, I had that traditional stereotypical view that a lot of people from the outside have. But I have to say that he definitely used you and Jeff, your ministry as well, even though you and I only probably met once or twice. Being able to witness that, the friendship that we had anyways, I was able to see that. And God uses that as a seed and then allows that to continue to grow. So my whole professional career path, you had a big part in it. Just the fact that I saw what you obtained and I said, man, I want that for myself. Because being a man, you know, we typically, we want to be, you know, the breadwinner, the provider. We want to be the one who, you know, so I already had the mindset that I didn't want to, you know, allow other people to look after me, but you definitely helped motivate me in getting the educational part. But in some God way, over time, you also, both of you also served as mentors from afar, just witnessing how you guys were impacting and how God was blessing even through those tough times. And, you know, Jeff, I know you shared a few things there that I was not aware of. I did know of a couple, but there were a couple of things, like you were talking about the missionary that, you know, was right. burned alive. A couple of other instances, the church burning down twice, you know, right. I had no idea. But anyway, so I just really appreciate the transparency there, because one goal of this outreach is to make sure people realize I'm not trying to sell any kind of prosperity. I'm not trying to sell. There's one. Good thing this video's not going up. But anyways, but yeah, that's my little girl. That's Merritt. Hey, Merritt, baby, can you step in here just a minute? Your brother's gonna help you with that. Okay. All right.
There was a thought. Just so free. Just, yeah.
Oh, and I was like, you know, just hey, anyway. So yeah, God served us three fastballs with the boys. That was a piece of cake. And then he broke off this Sandy Koufax like curveball that just like came out of nowhere. So, but I did at least want to acknowledge that real quick, is that you know, just because you don't talk to somebody every day or even every year, it doesn't mean that you can't still have an impact. So again, I really appreciate you sharing part of that. What would you say? And again, I know we don't have to do things official, like, you know, bullet points. I appreciate you kind of giving a summary of some of that. What would you say in terms of the ministry that you guys have had for so long? What would you say, I guess, have been some of the most rewarding parts of the various capacities that you guys have been able to serve in? I mean, I'm sure there's a ton, but what are a couple of the ones that you could say? Those were things, again, I know you mentioned about the church burning down. You were still able to, you know, have ministry. But just maybe share a few more of the blessings that God has really poured out.
Yeah. Well, church planting is a real unique ministry because, number one, you're having to form the culture. You're having to form everything. So, I mean, I've heard kindergarten teachers talk about, you know, kindergarten is you think it's an easy age to teach, but it's a difficult age to teach because they don't know anything. Yeah. You are the first person. Now they've got preschool more often than not, but used to, kindergarten was the very first time that they had any type of education. Mm-hmm. So they're like, okay, you need to tie your shoe. What's a shoe? You know, well, you just pick up your shoelaces. What's a shoelace? You know, and we'll go to the bathroom. Well, we don't have to go to the bathroom at home. Mommy helps me at home. Yeah, so just those little things, and that's really kind of the way it is when you're church planting, is the people that you attract into a brand new church, you don't have the structures, you don't have the programs, you don't have the playground for the kids, you don't have the wonderful praise music on Sunday morning that sounds like We the Kingdom, you know, down at the arena down there in Nashville, Tennessee. When they're singing, you don't have that stuff on Sunday morning. Oftentimes, it's the pastor standing up there leading the worship, and your wife on the piano. But what's great about that, and I go back to those first years of our marriage as well. We get so distracted by all of the other stuff in ministry, in marriage, in life with our children, work. We really need to keep it simple and keep it at the basics there. And that's where it's the most rewarding. And that's why I enjoy church planting so much, is because the people that are coming in are baby Christians. They're not even baby Christians. We've had witches in our congregation. We've had agnostics in there. We've had atheists in there. And what's interesting is you talk about they have this perception of what Christianity is, a lot of people. That's more in America than it is other places, just because we are so blessed. Just let me take a detour right quick. The church thrived until it became the national religion in Rome. You look at the church in Jerusalem, look in Acts, immediately after Jesus was crucified, it was exploding. They added their numbers daily. They were doing life together. And then a couple hundred years later, you have the Edict of Rome. And then the Roman emperor says, hey, by the way, he converts to Christianity. He says, by the way, we're going to make Christianity the national religion. Well, if the Roman emperor is Christian, guess what you have to be?
Oh, yeah.
Because then you're beheaded if you're not a Christian. With swap. Christianity then becomes the ones in power and still the ones that are persecuted. And so we lament persecution. I certainly don't welcome persecution, but the reality is the church thrives when we're being persecuted, because when we're in power, we don't rule very well. And so what you learn is that you don't have a lot of power as a planter. These people are coming in and they are powerless people. They come from some horrendous experiences. You know, they've been homeless. They've had mental issues. They've had demon possessions. They've been attempted abortions, attempted murder. I mean, just what they have gone through in their life, and they're hungry for something. And so they've latched on to all these other things out there because they're just looking for something. They just need some type of hope, some type of structure, some type of stability and foundation in their lives. And unfortunately, what they grab onto, if it's not Christ, it's just shifting sand. And so the beauty of a church plant and being a pastor in a church plant is you are right there with the people. You hear these stories, and then you watch the transformation in their lives. And we watched the lady who called herself a witch, who basically grew up homeless. We watched the transformation in her, and 3 years into it, she's standing up front and she says, "Y'all, I don't believe in Jesus Christ, that he's the Son of God, but I love this church." And you expect, you know, you're like, is that a compliment? Is that, you know, what is that?
You got to start somewhere.
Yes, right. You know, but
well, she would even raise her hands to worship.
Yeah, you know, she would beg to lead worship. Bless her heart. She didn't have any musical ability whatsoever. But you know what? In a new start church like that, it's okay to allow somebody like that to sing, because it's not about the performance. It's about the heart for Jesus. And while we, you know, I'm a perfectionist. Lisa can tell you, I'm hard pleased. And so, you know, when you see that as a perfectionist, you cringe. But then the Lord checks you and he says, she's not doing that for you. She's doing that for me. And that is the purest form of worship that you're witnessing there. How dare you look down at your nose at something like that? That, to me, is the joy of planting a church.
You're listening to Creation Compass.
Are you interested in learning more about homemade medicines, remedies, and other organic relaxation methods? I'd like you to check out the Empty Nest group page on Facebook. Ms. Dorothy Burnett, a great friend of mine, has many years of experience in this field using various plants and oils that have not only changed her life, but have improved the quality of living and comfort for many folks around her. She has a vast knowledge and amount of experience that can help you today. We'll also be providing a link on our Friends of CNC link at creationandcompost.com. Please check out the Empty Nest Facebook group page. I want to tell you about Citizen Impact. Its purpose is to motivate people to be active citizens, to minister to those in public policy fields, and to make an impact in the public policy arena. Paul Smith, the founder, has been involved in public policy work since 1996. He advocates on behalf of Christian education, as well as moral and religious liberty issues. They have an annual conference event coming up on August 18th at Berean Baptist Church in Lilburn, Georgia. U.S. Congressman Jody Heiss, Representative Tim Barr, Representative Ed Sessler will be some of the many speakers. Keynote speaker for the evening will be Allie Beth Stuckey, host of the show Relatable on Blaze TV. You can visit their website through our Friends of CNC page, or just go directly to citizenimpactusa.org.
I'll tell you one thing that I've constantly had to put in check for myself as well is trying to make sure that my type A roll through everything personality and then ask questions later. It's funny, Brianna actually mentioned that last night as we were talking. You know, she reminded me of my type A personality. We won't go into that, but anyways, but you know, it is something that when you get a passion for something in ministry and you want to see it done a certain way, I have prepared lessons like for Sunday school or for VBS or Awana's or, you know, even in my class at LCA or in a public school, even when it was not a spiritual emphasis in the public school, sometimes God's like, you know, I know that you wanted to teach this today, but here's something else. And I remember I did that one day in a public high school in North Carolina when I was there for 4 years. And the conversation at the end of class turned to the discussion of thermodynamics and the possibility of Noah's flood. It was so weird in a physical science class that it came up, and this student who claimed to be an agnostic asked the question about Noah and the pot. You know, so at the end of class, we went on a 10 or 15 minute, what some people would think is like a, you know, pedagogical hiatus, you know, but it actually was such a blessing because he came up to me afterwards and he says, "You're the first teacher who's ever attempted to answer that question. And even though I'm an agnostic, even though I don't really believe in what you believe," he said, "I appreciate you taking the time." And he stuck his hand out and shook my hand. And this was a very, very cold student who also had recently attempted to steal something off of my desk. And I prayed and prayed and prayed about it. And within a couple of days, he anonymously returned it. But I knew it was, you know, you just had, you don't want to accuse, but you know, and it was written all over his face. So I don't know where he is today, but I know that God was working on his heart in that. So just like that person that you're talking about, that young lady, you know, something stirring for them to be able to feel bold enough to do that. So that's something I've had to myself be like, you know, it's not about me. It's all about glorifying the name of Jesus. So as far as the podcast goes, when did you first really start thinking about doing that? And when did that become like something you said, you know, I'm going to go for this? Kind of tell me a little bit of background of that.
Yeah, I have listened to podcasts for years. And I guess I would say one I listened to had nothing to do with church planting or anything at all. But it's just various subjects. And it's one by Malcolm Gladwell, Revisionist History. And read a lot of his books. He's a fantastic storyteller. He does a good job of kind of getting the background of things. And he did his podcast a little bit differently than what I've heard in the past, where he mixes in some transitions and things like that, some sound effects. He did one on the Mafia Bomber, which is a historical podcast on... I can't remember the first name, but Lemo, French Lemo, from World War I, where they're developing the bombs, the bombers, and how they're trying to figure out how to drop the bombs from high altitudes, and talk about thermodynamics, how wind speed, the temperature, and the airspeed, and the cloudiness and all those things. This is before digital equipment, so all these things affecting that. And that probably inspired me to begin looking at it. And then probably around February or March of last year, I was working with a friend of mine, and we went through the doctoral program at Trevecca together. And he was doing some things, and so I got to talking with him, and we decided to write a book together. And so the podcast, which will release, we're hoping sometime in November. But anyway, so the podcast really was born out of kind of the church, the plant coaching and the book writing and the leadership development, kind of all that rolled into one. Because there's not really a podcast out there that addresses what I'm addressing. Because right now I'm just kind of going through the nuts and bolts of foundation of a church systems, right? I'll begin interviewing leaders. So I've got a guy coming on who's pretty controversial. He runs a ministry called Love Wins. And his ministry is to the LGBTQ community. He is a pastor. He's an ordained elder in the Church of Nazarene. He claims he is bisexual. He doesn't act on it. And so he distinguishes between the attraction, the temptation, which we believe temptation in the Church of Nazarene, our theology doesn't say that temptation is a sin, but we say the behavior is a sin. I'll be interviewing him. he's probably not somebody that you he's not somebody that I'll see eye to eye with, but I think it's important to have these conversations so that we can understand the nuances of that. Social media and 24-hour news is destroying our society. It divides us. It puts us all in our corners, in our little pods, in our little silos. And we can pick and choose who we want to listen to. And so we end up getting this confirmation bias in all areas of our life. And so whether it's I'm pro-vaccine or anti-vaccine, whether it's I'm pro-mask or anti-mask, or I'm pro-gay, anti-gay, pro-abortion, anti-abortion, pro-life, you know, anti-life, whatever you want to call it there, we end up listening to these conversations with each other all the time, and we're just saying the same thing, and we don't learn anything. And if there's one thing that my doctoral program taught me, the more education I got, the more I realized I don't know. And so if I can't listen to my brother or sister, I can't love. If I'm hating, you know, I can't reach the world if I'm stuck in my silo and just an echo chamber of viewpoints that I agree with. I never grow as an individual to learn another person's perspective. What if every agnostic, what if every atheist just sat in their silo and they never heard a presentation of the gospel? They never saw a presentation of the gospel that was anything other than a conflation of the American dream and Christianity. We would, you know, and I had posted on Facebook, it was interesting the other day, I posted just an innocuous post about why we need to plant churches. And there was a neighbor, and he said, well, what if they don't want to hear the gospel? You know, my response was, well, we're not asked to, you know, it's not like we're forcing them to partake of it, but we're just giving them an option. We're just exposing them to an alternate idea. This guy's younger. And so his viewpoint was, well, I don't want to have to hear something that I don't agree with.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where we are. And that's why I'm doing the podcast, is because I want to not only do the church planting, but part of leadership is learning to affect change.
Right.
And too much of change, and I mentioned to you, I want to interview you and Lisa one day for our podcast. Too much of change is based on deconstruction today, which is a philosophical thought from French philosopher René Descartes. And just basically says that in order to learn, someone has to have every foundation that they've ever had deconstructed. And then your job as the educator is to rebuild that. Well, that, I don't think you and Lisa agree with that. And then, you know, Jesus didn't agree with that. Spiritual formation is taking what's there and shaping it into something that's beautiful. It's taking that mess and making it a model. It's taking just work notes on a page and creating a symphony out of it, right? Yeah. And so that's kind of my vision with the podcast, is just to basically engage culture without enraging culture. Engage with people that may have different viewpoints, but we can hear the nuance there. And what you discover is that we probably agree on 95% of the stuff, but you're focusing on the 5% you disagree on.
Yeah.
And I can, as long as you don't wish me or my family harm, we can probably be friends, even if we disagree.
Well, and that's the thing, and I want to make sure that I call the name. Echoes Through Eternity is the name of your podcast with Dr. Jeffrey Skinner. And so when we're thinking about it in that light, I think it really does kind of highlight exactly what one of the main issues is within our society, is that so many people have kind of backed into their echo chambers. And, you know, we all want to get that confirmation, that affirmation, rather, from everyone that I'm doing the right thing. I'm thinking the right way and stuff. And that is so opposite of the church leaders. It's so opposite of our founding fathers of this country. Even though they weren't all Christians, they were all people, for the most part, who had a healthy respect for the creator of the universe. Some were deists, some, you know, there were a lot of different backgrounds in terms of their beliefs, but, you know, I think we've gotten to a point, and we've allowed media, we've allowed social media, because it is 24/7. We've allowed it to completely take over every emotion we have, so that when we hear that beep, it's almost like, you know, was it Pavlov's dog, experiment. Dog, yeah. And I know they, you know, the TV show The Office, they even showed that with, was it Dwight, you know, and the candy anyway. So it's crazy because, you know, last night I was in the middle, you know, Brianna and I were in the middle of a conversation and my phone went off and I didn't go for it. But she told me, she goes, you know, you really need to silence your notifications, because even if you don't answer it, you're still psychologically, it's taking you away from the things that you need to be focused on. And I agree. You know, I'm humble enough to mention that. Yeah, I probably do. Because subconsciously we all have, you know, we've almost been trained, especially these younger generations, to think that, okay, well, I have to go to this person for my source. Yet God's word is often never mentioned as that authoritative source. So I think one of the biggest issues I have found in what God's put on my heart is biblical authority, and the submission to it is by far one of the biggest issues that we have as a culture, is because, well, that was written by ancient men. You know, God didn't speak that to them. That's what so many people have been trained to think. And, you know, as you mentioned, so many of these philosophers, they're heralded as these great minds, when there's so much, you know, Paul, the Apostle Paul, is one of the deepest thinkers and one of the most intelligent writers, to the point where I have to get three or four translations of God's word and a few commentaries and Halley's handbook. You know, I've got all these different things that I'm trying to go through just to try to make sense of some of the thoughts. But I feel like as church leaders and as people like myself who are just still learning and still really trying to understand some of those deeper thoughts, is to how to communicate that to people who do not have the same perspective. And then, like you mentioned, it is okay to not have that same perspective. That we can have different thoughts, but we can learn from people who we're never going to see eye to eye with, but we still need to be able to relate to that person and to understand where they're coming from, so that when we come across other people, that, you know, we'll be able to share that message of hope with them. And go ahead.
Well, you mentioned, I was just going to tell you on that, in that vein of thought there, you mentioned that Lisa had kind of influenced you and me to a lesser extent, just kind of from afar, just watching our lives. And that really is what the Christian life is. Yeah. It's less about talking and just more about doing. And as we do Christianity, as we live our lives, people notice that stuff. And then they, and you know, Facebook is not an accurate representation of anybody's life.
Right.
Snapshots. Oh, yeah. And you know, often the family portraits are the professional ones, and they're that perfect shot that you try 25 times to get. What they didn't hear, what they didn't see was the mom grabbed the kid up by the pigtails and you know, swing them into the picture. And you don't see the behind the scenes stuff, but life is messy. Christianity is messy. But when they watch us go through that mess, when they watch us navigate the chaos of life, that's where they're really impacted. That's not to say that we don't speak. It's not to say that we don't teach. We do. But it's as you go. We translate that Great Commission, go into all the world and preach the gospel and make disciples of all men. As if it's this, well, you've got to do this intentional thing about going somewhere to do this ministry. But really that word is as you go. So as you're doing life, it was just the Hebrew culture, the rabbinic culture, where everyone, or not everyone, where the disciples had a rabbi. And the saying was, may you be covered in the dust of your rabbi. And that was one of the best compliments, the best blessing that you could have, because to be covered in the dust of your rabbi meant that you were so close in relationship with your rabbi, you shared the same dirt. Mm. And my dissertation thesis was, what makes a salient Christian identity? Because there's such an identity crisis in our culture today. And so what I discovered was, you know, it's not the big church. It's not how great the sermon is on Sunday morning. It's not the politics. There are churches that are super conservative. There are churches that are super liberal. There's Catholic churches, Anglican churches, Baptist churches, Seventh-day Adventist churches, churches from all over the spectrum there. It really didn't matter. People really don't care about the underlying theological thought of that church because they're going to believe what they believe, whether you like it or not. I can have 200 people in my congregation on Sunday morning, and we could all be members of the Church of the Nazarene. But I guarantee you there's going to be some differences in kind of our thought process and what our actual beliefs are. It doesn't stop us from being Nazarene. It doesn't stop us from joining together there. So what I found in my thesis there was the two most important things for a second Christian identity. One was a mentor, someone, a relationship with someone who was a Christian or had a salient Christian identity, and the other was positive experiences. Mm-hmm. And so if your experience with the church has essentially been screaming at them, telling them they're going to go to hell because they disagree with you, you're probably going to be less likely to believe their words about Jesus Christ being the Son of God. The other side is that if there's no other Christians in their life, they're probably never going to have the opportunity to experience that. And that goes back to the echo chamber that we were talking about before. And the first one speaks to your watching Lisa and being mentored by her in the classroom and things like that. And that formed you earlier. That had an impact on you, and you're a teacher today, and you're being faithful in your teaching and how you do your job there. It's not, you're not a clone of Lisa, but she had an impact on your life. That's what I found in Christianity. That's what happens throughout life there. And that really is what I believe is the Christian life is about there. I think it was St. Francis of Assisi. I may have the quote wrong. It may, but basically it was preach the gospel at all times, if necessary, use words.
Well, and I think too, I think, you know, me growing up, I grew up in a Free Will Baptist church, and then I transitioned later to what was labeled an independent Baptist church, but they really operated more as a Southern Baptist, and then I've been in two more Southern Baptist churches since then. But I found that even in that, just the label of Free Will Baptist, I learned a lot about what some Free Will Baptist churches advocate, you know, about you, right, you know, losing your salvation. That was nothing. Yeah. That we ever, like I was ever taught as a child, I was always taught, yeah, that you were secure in that. But it is interesting that, you know, with the dynamics of the labels, I've seen a lot of churches that have dropped Baptist or have dropped Methodist, and they've just become non-denominational, to even though they would follow the doctrinal beliefs of one particular, they wouldn't identify as that because they were, you know, trying to reach the greater, you know, the greater audience, so to speak, to get people in, to not have a stigma of growing up in a Baptist church or growing up in, you know, and I guess we could talk for a long time about that. I think what you said in particular about seeing who Jesus is we do turn on the TV, and I'm not going to start calling names, but I think we probably can all think of some pastors who are more of the prosperity gospel mindset, where it is about the more you give, the more you're going to be blessed. And of course that is not scriptural. That is not biblical in terms of you're going to become wealthy and have this huge house. And, oh, thank you for my $65 million jet. I got it at a good discount, but anyways, but you know, it really is one of those things where it's like, I have to be so much more concerned with the person's soul and whether or not that person's going to be on the right side of eternity. So I do believe there has to be a balancing act in terms of what you mentioned about, you know, people yelling at them and telling them they're going to go to hell. You know, we do have to hold them accountable. We do have to make sure they understand that there is a judgment, but we also need to make sure that they understand that the Christian life is not just about following all these rules. Right. You know, it's not a works-based system. It's all about that grace that Christ showed on the cross. Right. And that's, you know, and I had some with a group from the Seventh-day Adventist who we had an interesting discussion early on in my marriage, in mine and Brianna's marriage. It was actually about a week or two before my dad passed away suddenly. But it was so interesting that God put those people in my life to help me basically be reestablished in my faith, that it wasn't about what I did. It's all about what Jesus has already done, and that I was secure in that. So
you're listening to Creation Compass.
Did you grow up hearing stories on the old back porch? Do you like just sitting around hearing people talk about current events and the good old days? Well, if you do and you're not easily offended, why don't you check out Charlie Platt and the Dirt Road Sports Show? They air every Saturday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central. You can find them on Facebook or their YouTube channel. These gentlemen are all good, Christian, like-minded conservative folks that share our ideals here at Creation and Compost. We've partnered with them. There's a link under the Friends of CNC tab, and you can check them out every Saturday night live and in color.
I guess kind of transitioning to Lisa, one thing that I really appreciated sitting in your classroom is how you could influence students with just, you know, you really encouraged me to just be me. And that was something that even after I first started teaching, I really had to discover who I was in terms of a teacher, because I was still had that hard shell where I was like, I've got to be the authoritarian. I've got to, you know, I can't let them rule me and stuff. You know, it was still that mindset. But several years in, and especially after, you know, Brianna and I started having kids, I was able to become more of myself. And a lot of that went back to the interactions that you had with your students. Kind of thinking about your career in public school, maybe share some of the positives, maybe even some of the challenges that maybe you faced in the classroom that you don't mind talking about.
Well, I was the same way, like you said. I think when I first started teaching, in fact, Jeff and I laugh a lot about my first year teaching. I would come home in tears. It's like, they're not doing what I'm telling them to do. You know, I mean, it's like, I am your teacher. You're going to do what I say to, you know, and just really have it. And so they, I asked for them to bring in a mentor for me. And my mentor was like, Lisa, just let them. I mean, like, you had to ask my permission to get a crayon box. I mean, you had to ask my permission, you know, because I'm thinking I've got to control everything, you know, please ask me for permission to sneeze, you know, kind of thing. And they're like, you're so funny and you just won't even give in to that. And so I think we all have to get to that place, because I think, I mean, you were the same age I was when you first started teaching, and it was just kind of like, I'm an adult, but am I really? I don't really feel like an adult. I'm in charge, but I'm like, where is that?
I still don't feel like one most of the time, just for everyone listening. So.
I know. Sometimes I don't either. And so I had to really commit to that. And what I noticed, of course, I felt like I could be more myself when I was teaching Sunday school at church, you know, because I could just say, you know, and I could live life with people that believe the same way I did. And so what I found as I started teaching was I invested me into them, and I let them invest into me. And it was interesting after I moved to another school and worked for a different principal, and he called me in at the end of the year, and he's like, and I really didn't even think he was happy with me, because he just never, I don't know what it was, but he said, so I've been meeting with students about you, because you're like their favorite teacher. And he's like, I'm just trying to figure out, you know, I've been talking to them. My dog has decided to come in to be rubbed. So, hi, Bailey. She's like, oh, here y'all talking. Who are you talking to? So anyway, he was talking to the students, and they were like, she just shares life with us. And so, and he was a Christian. And I said, you know, that's how Jesus related so well to everybody. He just lived life with them. He was just right there with them. And my goal as a classroom teacher, I do teach life science still, I'm not in there to try to make Christians out of everybody. I mean, that is not the goal at all, but I live that out. And so when a kid asks me a question, I say, now remember, I'm coming from a Christian standpoint. And so when I give y'all this answer, that's the background that I'm coming from to give you this answer. That way there's no way somebody can come in and say, oh, you're trying to make Christians out of your kids. No, the student asks me a question and they know the perspective that I'm coming from. And I think it's like what Jeff said, you know, I teach now at a school, Matt, there's 200 of us teachers. I don't even know all the teachers at my school. Yeah. You know, somebody will say, so-and-so come to, you know, like if the kids aren't there, so-and-so, you're needed in the office. And I'm like, is that a custodian? Is that a teacher? You know, I have no clue who it is. Because, you know, we have 2,000 kids at our school. And we have 5 teams of teachers in every grade level, and then connections and all of that in the middle school that I'm at now. But my point is, people know me. They'll come up and they're like, thank you. You're always smiling. Do you know you always speak to everyone? I'm like, yeah, I do. But I'm intentional, you know, about that. And I think that's what it is. And I think what people are looking for these days is not somebody standing necessarily. I'm not going to say if God didn't call you to do it, not to do it. But I'm just saying not that I've got my Bible and I'm shaking it over somebody's head in the hallway. I'm just living life. And as you're around me, conversations are naturally going to go, you know, well, oh, you're a Christian. Oh, yeah. You know, tell me about that or watch. And people will just come up and say, you are just such a blessing at the school. And I'm like, I'm looking at their name tag. And I'm like, who are you? You know, who are you? Because we have to wear name tags and stuff. And so anyway, that's just how I've done it. And that's what students seem to like. And it's funny, you're standardized testing when you're sitting there waiting for them to say you can start. You know, I've already got the computers out. We're ready to go. And everybody's just kind of like, tell us a story. Tell us a story. And so, and I'm like, you know, they want a real story. They want something that I've done. You know, I'm like, okay, funny, dumb. You know, I'll ask, you know, what category do you want it in? And they'll tell me, you know. And so, and then I just share life with them. And then I just think relationships are what's important. And not that we're expected to be perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but that we're authentic. And I can go in and tell my kids, you know what, y'all, I'm having a rough day today. You know, such and such happened or whatever. And I'm not saying it like to make them feel sorry for me. I'm not trying to make them behave better. I'm just saying, hey, if you notice I'm a little down today, you know, this is what it is, because I teach seventh graders. You know, they're on a roller coaster all the time. And, you know, people are like, how can you teach middle school? I'm like, I'm right there with you. You know, I'm all over the place too. And to show them, and especially after COVID, to show them that it's okay to have anxiety, not really knowing what's going to happen, but we can still work through that. We don't just let that, you know, put us to where we can't do something. And, and of course, for me, God's, you know, my strength. And so I think relationships are where some people are missing it. And I think that when your walk and your talk don't match up, that's where people get, you're not really, you know. But if I went over a little bit too much on somebody and I say, you know what, I owe you an apology. I was, you know, whatever. And apologize and be authentic about it.
Yes.
Then people can see. You know, I'm not Jesus, but I do need to represent him. And I'm not going to do it perfectly, but I'm going to be authentic enough to let you know if I've messed up, that I am human and I'm sorry. And so that's kind of where I am in the classroom. I always have worked places where there's a Christian organization where we have people come in, Youth for Christ, that's what it is up here. You know, and I support those things. I'm the faculty sponsor. And it's interesting. We have a lot of men that come in. And I say men, I'm talking, you know, they could be my children. And so they come in and they play basketball. And we're in the gym and they're doing all kinds of things. And so I had to miss 3 in a row because I had SST meetings. And so I had to miss. And the 6th graders and the 8th graders had switched schedules. And so I'm taking my kids to a restroom break, 6th graders, and I'm right there by the cafeteria. And several of the 6th grade girls jumped out of their line, knew when they were going to get in trouble, and came and hugged me. Where have you been? And, you know, I'm at the age now, I can't get out there and do all that stuff that those younger ones are doing with them. I do play the games with them and stuff like that. But I was like, whoa, they missed me. You know, even though I'm not the young in there with them, my presence is important. So that lets me know there's something about the relationship and my care for them that, you know, they're missing. It's not all about fun. It's about where have you been? You know, we appreciate you. And so I think that's where we just have to be as teachers and just be authentic, you know, and I let my kids talk. I mean, it's life science. So, you know, let's talk about some issues. And I'm not scared. I mean, I'm at the age now and I have 2 teenagers. I'm not scared to talk about anything. And so that relationship, I think, is very important.
You're listening to Creation Compass.
Let me tell you about a coffee company that I am super excited to support. 7 Weeks Coffee. Pregnancy care centers exist to meet the needs of at-risk pregnancies by providing services such as ultrasounds and prenatal care. Their goal is to support every mother to help them choose life. Right now, there's over 2,000 pregnancy centers across America, but there is one problem. Many of them are underfunded. Smaller pregnancy centers struggle to pay for equipment, rent, and staff, and rely on part-time volunteers. At 7 Weeks Coffee, it is their mission to ensure that these pregnancy centers have the equipment and resources necessary to support every mother adequately. Their mission is to promote godly values, provide excellent coffee, and protect every beating heart. Check them out at 7weekscoffee.com or on Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn.
Pastor one time, he said, you know, people will never care about how much you know until they know how much you care. And I know that that's something that many people have said for a long time. But that was one thing I noticed when I was student teaching with you 2004. You know, throw that number out there. But, you know, I do remember, and I can still remember the kid's face. I remember his name. Of course, I'm not going to call his name. He's probably 30 years old now, but which is so weird. But I remember having to discipline him when I was student teaching. We were out in the hallway, part of that last class period that was a little bit challenging. And I remember him, you know, standing in the hallway. And of course, I told him, I said, you know, I'm gonna have to give you a referral for, you know, what you did and all. And he told me, you know, as I was getting ready to finish my time up there, he come up to me one day and he says, I appreciate you just being honest with me and being nice, you know, but also not being scared, you know, to discipline me. You know, he said it in different words, obviously, you know, I appreciate you being real. And so that's one thing that I've had in my mind, you know, because some people, I think, especially as teachers, especially earlier teachers, they want everybody, you know, they may not say it, but we want every kid to like us. You know, we want every kid, we want to know that we have changed every child's life, because that's that unrealistic expectation back when I came through, it was No Child Left Behind, which thankfully has been abandoned. And of course, other things have come across that, you know, but I think it all comes down to what you just said. It's all about those relationships and not being afraid to be yourself, but also realizing you're not going to reach everybody, just like in your ministry. It's so unrealistic to tell teachers or anyone that they're going to change every single person's life for the better. There's going to be some people that you just are never going to see eye to eye with, but down the road, God continues to work in their life and in their, you know, in their heart. And they may send you a message like what I got the other day. 17 years ago, I taught a student that reached out to me, and I did not have any idea that he and I made any kind of connection to the level that he shared.
Right.
And he finds me on Facebook, says he's been listening to the podcast, and now he's actually doing work redesigning a logo for Creation and Compost.
Had no
idea, you know, but he told me, he says, the fact, and this was my first teaching job right out, you know, at Arnold Magnet Academy. Mm-hmm. And he just said, you were one of the only teachers that would speak to me. And just the fact that I wasn't living for the Lord, especially then, I was, like I said, I was going through a lot of things myself. But the fact that God preserved that and allowed me to see any part of that, and I'm like, well, that's God working. That had nothing to do with me, because if you knew what, you know, my focus was at that time, it definitely was not on praising the name of Jesus. It was about Matt. I said, but, you know, it reminded me back to what my daddy, who was just a South Georgia peanut farmer, he always said, you need to take time, you need to take equal time sitting down with that farmer who's renting 50 to 100 acres of land, just like you would the one who owns 20,000 acres of land. You need to treat that 50 to 100 acre farmer the same as you do the one that you know you're going to get a whole lot more money from the income of his crop. You need to value every single relationship and it not be about the amount that somebody gives you, the amount of respect, the amount of money, but you need to look at that person as someone who matters. And then we had a Sunday school teacher years ago who said, you look at that person as a precious soul whom Jesus Christ died for. So I think all of that, the basic way we treat people, I really do agree with you in that, that I believe that is a biblical concept. I believe that's a construct of Christ in the way that we do, in the way that we do everything, whether it's teaching, whether it's being a custodian, whether it's planning churches, whether it's being a doctor. So it's really refreshing to, after so many years, and you saying that you're 31 is about, that that's still your mindset, because I think there's so many, you know, young teachers and veteran teachers that can get a lot from that. I think that's extremely important. So I did tell you that we would keep this at a time that was like not going to consume your whole day. Obviously, I could talk to you all day long because we obviously have a lot of catching up to do, and this has been a real blessing. As we kind of start to start to close out and everything, what are some, for both of you, what are some, you know, maybe a final encouragement that you have for people who are maybe considering either planning a church, going into ministry of some degree, maybe becoming maybe being a Christian teacher in a public school like I was for 16 and a half years. And I was not shy about my stance. I didn't beat people over the head. But maybe what's a final last encouragement from both of you before we close out and talk a little bit more about how people can get in contact with you? What are some things you'd like to share?
First of all, you know, I have it on my wall at school. This is a calling for me. It's not a job.
Yeah.
And I started teaching. I remember one Christmas, I got a chalkboard and some chalk. And that's when my teaching career started, in my room with my stuffed animals. And I mean, I just really think what I was saying about, of course, coveting prayer, you know, making sure that you're covered in it. And just living with the idea that I am God's hands and feet. Definitely, and I'm sure Jeff will say this, as far as planning churches and all, don't do it unless you're called. Don't go into a huge ministry unless God tells you to do that kind of thing. And I mean, even a Christian teacher. I mean, whatever you're doing, make sure that God is in charge of that. But like he said, we are to be Christians as we go, you know, in the grocery store line, as I'm passing by, you know, if I'm walking in the neighborhood, whatever. But I just think it's all about those relationships and being authentic with people and not trying to pretend like we've got it all together, because we don't. And you're talking about being a parent changes us, you know, when our kids are teenagers and got one grown now, and goodness, we don't have all the answers. That could be a whole nother broadcast about things
part two coming up. Kids. Part two.
That's right, with our own kids, you know. And so I just think that cover your life in prayer and, you know, and have that accountability. Don't go into something by yourself. You know, having that encouragement from other people.
And it's kind of interesting because the same principles apply in church planting, just like she said. I mean, the first thing I tell people if they're considering planting a church is you don't do it unless you're called to do it. Planting churches and this sounds egotistical, but if you're planting a church, you know it's true. It's the Navy SEALs of ministry.
Yes.
You are out there in the trenches, on the front lines, behind enemy lines. And you are attacked and you're taking fire from every direction. And if you don't have a calling on your life, if it is not the core of who you are, if your marriage is not solid, if your relationship with the Lord is not solid, you won't make it. Because it's tough. One of my favorite movies is Princess Bride. And lots of good lines from that movie, but one of them was get used to disappointment.
Very well said.
It sounds like you're you're just, you know, on the other side of ministry, and you're just jaded and all that stuff. And that's not what I mean at all. I'm just saying, have realistic expectations.
Yeah.
You're not going to change the world from one church in the corner of Auburn, Alabama, that, you know, at its height runs 70 people. Not going to happen. There's a, and I won't quote it specifically, correctly, but essentially it's this poem that says, when I was young, I wanted to change the world. And then as I got older, I realized I couldn't change the world, so I sought to change my country. And then I realized that changing the country was just too hard, so I began to just kind of work on my city. And then I realized that just changing the city was just too big of a job, so I decided to try and change my family. And here I am, an old man, and I've discovered that if I just change myself, everything else falls in line. And that's true. We just work on our own self, work on our own relationship with the Lord. And when you do that, whether you're teaching, whether you're preaching, whether you're planting a church, whatever it is, you keep God at that core there. You can endure all kinds of stuff. You can endure being burned alive in a car in India if that's where God has called you. You can endure losing families and relationships. I'm not minimizing the persecution that we undergo here in the United States. And sometimes I have friends that will say, we're not persecuted here in the United States. And because they got to, we're not being burned alive and all this other stuff. Well, that's like telling a lady who was sexually assaulted, you're just sexually assaulted, you weren't full-on raped. Well, does it really matter to her? And so it's not to say that we're not, but it is to say that to keep things in perspective, and don't consider yourself as a victim when you're undergoing that persecution. Paul said it best, count all things to the glory of God, right? And so just keep that core, Jesus as your core, your relationship there. And then, if it's a call, make sure that you're leading yourself. When you lead yourself, leading others is easy. And then and then the final thing that she said is don't do it alone. Church planting is pastoring is one of the most lonely professions around. Pastors quit. We talk about closing churches. Pastors quit at a phenomenal rate. Usually about 3 years into the ministry, they're done. And they don't come back because it's hard work. Church planting is even more isolating because you don't even have a staff. You don't really even have a congregation. Everything is up to you. Don't do it alone. Find a coach, find a mentor, find both. The coach is going to be your high altitude guy. The mentor is going to be in the trenches with you. He's going to know the culture. She's going to know the culture. Just like the mentor teacher knows the classroom. They know that stuff, and they don't even, and constantly be willing to learn. When you stop learning, you stop growing. Leaders are learning, bottom line. So that's pretty much my advice for anyone in church planting, but I think you heard lots of crossover between what Lisa said and what I said. It pretty much applies to all areas of life.
Mm-hmm. Really any profession. Yeah.
Well, I think all of those principles are, exactly areas I believe that people who listen to this can definitely apply in a meaningful way. And one thing I really appreciate about our the folks who I interact with is not everybody has that same belief system that do download our podcast. And that's part of why I want to get people from so many different areas and different, whether it be ministry or whether it just be service in a, in a job that may not be technically associated with, planning a church or evangelism.
Mm-hmm.
I just think those core concepts that you guys have hit on, I think that's so applicable in people finding their purpose. Because I think the reason we see so many people discontent with, I don't want to get off on a whole that I can pick this up and I can order, download, I can have at my fingertips pretty much just about within reason. And I'm going to write a book at some point that says something like, we need more Blockbuster videos, or I miss the days of Blockbuster video, just because there was always disappointment when you walked in because you never were going to have every movie or every video game or every poster that you wanted, but you would leave with something. But it gave you an appreciation for that whole looking forward to things. Yeah. And I think the reason we have so many people depressed and discontent today is because we have so much right there. And like you said earlier, Jeff, so many people in the echo chamber saying, this is what you should think. This is what you should believe. Don't listen to these people. Or you get on Facebook and you start getting all these recommendations of listen to this person, go to this person, don't go to this person, you know. So guys, it's been really refreshing to hear your perspectives with so many years of experience, not calling you old in any way, but so many years of wisdom that you now, okay, I just got worse there anyways. but I sincerely appreciate your time. I thank you so much for the ministries that you still have. And, for those listening, Echoes Through Eternity with, Dr. Jeffrey Skinner, you can find it. I believe I found it on iHeartRadio. I believe if you do, but
anywhere.
Okay. Anywhere. So I know
I'm listening on Alexa.
Yeah, it's interesting that, you know, we were always told growing up, you know, you spend your life, if God blesses you with that one person that you spend the rest of your life with, now we call so many different women's names, Siri, Alexa, you know, all these other things. So you just get to thinking, wow, there's a big contradiction there somewhere. It's got to be. But I look forward to doing this again soon. Thank you guys again.
Yes.
Yeah, thanks. Great. Appreciate it, Matt. You have a great day.
You're listening to Creation Compass.
Have you ever checked out Weapons of Righteousness Ministry website? Law enforcement officers encounter daily darkness on a level that most people can't comprehend. They're forced to deal with individuals on their darkest days for the purpose of bringing order and safety in that person's chaotic life or situation. Law enforcement officers need to recognize the spiritual battle that they're involved in and understand the weapons that Jesus Christ has provided for them to walk in victory over the darkness of this world. Police officers are on the front lines of the spiritual and physical battle between light and darkness. They need to see themselves as weapons of righteousness for the kingdom of God rather than just mere government agents. Weapons of Righteousness Ministries is now needed more than ever due to the current climate within the nation. We have an opportunity through this ministry to not only transform the lives of law enforcement officers, but also to their families and communities they serve. And this is from Taylor M. Clark, founder and president of Weapons of Righteousness Ministries, Incorporated. Weapons of Righteousness Ministries is a 501c3 nonprofit organization whose primary focus is on relationship-based deep discipleship and biblical truth amongst active, prior, and retired law enforcement. Please check them out today at weaponsofrighteousness.org. All right, it's reflection time. How did we grow today? Dr. Lisa Skinner changed the way that my career path would have gone had we not been paired together in the fall of 2004. She received a very broken young man in the person of Matt Bracewell. She was very patient, kind, exemplary, and a true mentor for a young prospective teacher who did not have any spiritual consideration of molding his students' futures. It was just a future job. But her example is one that has always stuck with me over the years. Her husband, Dr. Jeff Skinner, is such a talented workman for Jesus Christ. He has served in various capacities over several states, and he's connected with ministers all over the world. His fingerprint has been left in many places for the furthering of one thing, to see lives touched by the gospel. Check out his podcast, Echoes Through Eternity, and get connected with someone that God has called to plant churches and hope for eternity. Our verse for this week comes from Luke 8:11-15. This is the meaning of the parable. The seed is the word of God. Those along the path are the ones who hear, and then the devil comes and takes away the word from their hearts so that they may not believe and be saved. Those on the rock are the ones who receive the word with joy when they hear it, but they have no root. They believe for a while, but in the time of testing they fall away. Seed that fell among thorns stands for those who hear. But as they go on their way, they are choked by life's worries, riches, and pleasures, and they do not mature. But the seed on good soil stands for those with a noble and good heart, who hear the word, retain it, and by persevering produce a crop. Just as at Creation and Compost, when we talk about homesteading, this also should be something we practice in our spiritual lives. We need to always continue to work to make sure that that root is established in the truths of God's Word. Now, I want to remind you about our previous podcast. We've now had people from all six continents with people download our podcast. You can go directly to our webpage, creationandcompost.com, or you can go to creationandcompost.buzzsprout.com. You'll be able to hear archived episodes and many of our recorded video sessions with our guests. Now, I'll be speaking at Flat Creek Baptist Church in Colquitt, Georgia on August the 3rd. That'll be a Wednesday night service at 6 p.m. We're going to be doing all kinds of fun stuff. We're going to talk about creation and evolution. We're going to talk about why it matters. There are going to be some giveaways, some science demos, and all kinds of fun stuff. So if you want to hear about the topic of creation evolution, talk about age of the earth, dinosaurs, and all other kind of cool stuff, please come check us out that evening, August 3rd, 6 p.m., Flat Creek Baptist Church, Colquitt, Georgia. Now, if you're interested in having somebody from Creation and Compost come speak to your church, your youth group, your school, your business, you can send us an email at bracewell2007@creationandcompost.com. Please check out the various groups that we advertise throughout our episodes. They're so varied, and we have so many people who have just been equipped to spread the message of the gospel. Weapons of Righteousness, Empty Nest Group on Facebook, Dirt Road Sports Show, Citizen Impact, and of course their upcoming August conference. You can also check out things like 7 Weeks Coffee, Minutemen Coffee, all kind of other groups that we have on our website, creationandcompost.com. Now looking ahead, school is going to be starting back very soon. There's so much to look forward to, but there also might be some hesitation, a little bit of anxiety, maybe even some fears. And it might not just be students. This may involve teachers, parents, and pretty much anybody whose schedule is going to be impacted over the next few weeks. Stay in touch with Creation and Compost as we aim to encourage you with truth from God's Word about creation, homesteading, and just good old family fun. As always, God bless, hang in there, and always be ready to teach the truth.
You're listening to Creation Compass.